This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. And as you know, Neil and I kind of swap having guests, and today is no exception. We have Neil's wonderful guests, who is the CEO of Analytikai. And so, Neil, I'm going to let you do your formal introduction.
Well, thank you, Amanda. Yes, Analytikai. You know, back in the day, I had a social media marketing tools conference called Social Tools Summit. And when we were doing research for influencer marketing tools, this is back in 2014, 2015. At the time, we had a company called Tracker and another company called Get Little Bird, which is now part of Sprinklr, as sponsors. So I was thinking, well, who else is out there in the space? And so I actually knew about Analytikai for a long time. Did not meet our guest today, Tim, for a while. I was in touch with his marketing director, Joe Fields. But over the time, as I've been involved more in influencer marketing and writing a book, what have you, I've actually had the pleasure of being able to work together and actually meet Analytikai, you know, the team at their headquarters in London. So it's really nice. That was pre-pandemic, obviously. So, you know, now we have this podcast. It's about the topic of influence. And there's one thing that's always missing in the conversation, which is, well, we understand how influencer marketing works from the B2C perspective. What about B2B? And really in the B2B, those companies I mentioned before have really pretty much gone into B2C. So really the only, you know, leading, truly leading company in B2B influencer marketing today really is Analytikai. And Tim is the founder and CEO. He's going to be a wealth of knowledge. I'm just so excited that you're here, Tim. Can't wait to hear what you have to teach us.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. I'm excited to talk to you both and appreciate all of the kind comments so far.
So, Tim, you were involved and you created this company while some of these influencers were literally in their diapers. So where did you get this feeling, you know, back almost a decade ago, I'm assuming, that there was something here in what we today call influencer marketing?
That's a really good question. And thinking back to it, my background is from PR. And I guess, you know, coming from PR, I've never really been a fan of advertising because I always feel you need to earn the right for people to say that you're good rather than like saying that you're good. And that also brings up the feeling of trust. And what we've seen over the years, and I think what has started maybe over the past decade, is that people don't trust brands as much as they used to. And that has really accelerated. And so if advertising, I felt, was being less effective and if trust was declining, then we saw people popping up who weren't journalists, who weren't analysts, but they had influence over the end decision maker. And so I thought, well, that's really, really interesting that there's people that influence the end decision in a B2B context, but there's no one managing these people. You know, there's people managing, you know, in investor relations, you're managing your investment strategy and obviously wanting to increase the stock price. And analyst relations, you're managing a bunch of analysts. And media relations, you're managing a bunch of journalists. But there were these anomaly influences, as some people called them. And it was just this white space. So I thought it was really exciting to, when obviously a lot of people think social influencers are Instagram, your TikTok, Snapchat, you're the people with, you know, millions of followers. And you know, there's a ton of vendors that have tried to chase that kind of market. But the B2B influencer marketing is much more nuanced. And influencers mean a lot of different things. So I think it's more complex. I think it's more nuanced, but I like a challenge. And I saw that there was something there that needed to be innovation.
So I go back to that Social Tools Summit because the marketing director for Tracker at the time said, well, we decided to sponsor your conference, Neil, because we saw you as an influencer and we thought that was the best way to collaborate with you. So, you know, my sense is that if there are B2B companies listening, they might have already been doing this type of thing for a while. But, you know, defining who has influence, we've seen companies like Clout and Peer Index, you know, come and go. And obviously, it's not a science yet. You're trying to create algorithms and build a company around better identifying who these influencers are. So, you know, not you can't share all your secrets with us today, but how do you, you know, in this B2B context where it's very nuanced, how do you go about determining who exactly has more influence than someone else?
That's, I think it's the best question, and it's also the toughest. I think the interesting thing was when Clout and Cred and Peer Index were happening, first of all, it was almost before its time. They became very popular, but then they became too gamified, in my opinion, and it became all about ratings and just one number. And I don't think people can do much with one number. I think you'll see in the B2C marketplaces that they talk about macro, micro, nano influencers. I personally hate that term because people say, oh, we need micro influencers. What is a micro influencer? Oh, it means that they've only got 10,000 followers. We're in B2B. Maybe you've got 200 followers, but maybe they're the 200 people setting the industry. It's not a B2C play. So it's not about how much engagement you're getting on your Instagram feed. It's the quality of your audience, your expertise, how much you can create content. And so influence is not just a figure. So yeah, we have probably about just over 40 algorithms going into the main kind of ranking. But also, you know, both of you, like Neil and Amanda, you're influential in different capacities. And Neil, I've heard you speak in social media marketing world, and you know there's 400 people in the room, and then there's all the social amplification that of people, you know, posting what you're saying online. So you can reach, you know, tens of thousands, you know, in one particular talk. So I've seen the influence that can have over our marketplace, which is great. But everyone has a different kind of influence, and so I think the best way to answer that, to give you the accurate answer, is we want to define people's persona. We want to define people's role. And we want to bring people's motivations and expertise to match what brands are looking for. And someone with 500 followers that might have a network of academics, for example, may be really influential for Coca-Cola if they're trying to change perception about them contributing to obesity. Now, that is even a B2C play, but that's kind of like a B2B use case where you're trying to influence an inner stakeholder group. So we try to categorize people by a number of different, you know, filters so that people can essentially just match make like brands and influencers together. And the key thing, which I think plays into this, is not about just selling product. It's about driving awareness and demand generation, and the sales cycles are a lot longer. So I think when you try and unpack what does influence mean, it's not just one score like the Clout, Cred, and the Peer Index was like way back when. I think it's maybe you're looking at 50 different criteria and you sort of adjust the kind of filters according to what you're looking for.
Yeah, I know that, Amanda, I know you're ready to ask a question. I just, fun fact, back in the day, in the heyday of Clout, I actually had this business idea. I bought the URL fantasyclout.com, and I was going to build a site where people can predict the clout scores of influencers in the future. Anyway, I never ran with that idea. But anyway, just fun fact. Amanda, over to you. It was so gamified.
What I'm hearing is like in your what you're saying is a lot of what Neil and I talk about, which is that influence is very contextual and there's no one sort of universal influencer. So which is interesting to see that it's a marketplace too, where there's algorithms then that predict influence. So as a company that's B2B or B2C really, that's trying to figure out, okay, so how, you know, that you hear these terms like, oh, we've allocated X percentage of our marketing budget to influencer marketing, which what I just believe is really just marketing. How do you recommend going about strategizing a plan? Because what I'm kind of struggling with is that agencies, brands are looking at influencer marketing like this tactical campaign where they're like, okay, there's X set of deliverables. We're going to do 4 posts on Instagram and they're going to have this many followers. And then influencer marketing is getting siloed into this, like basically social media content creator advertising. How do you shift? Like, what is the modern, the new in your terms, like the new influencer marketing brief or strategy?
Yeah, I think that's a really good analogy there. And I think it's not icing on the cake. It's the actual, you know, it's got to be built into the cake. You know, it's got to be built into that. So if you're creating content and then the content's already, and then you just want to do some influencer marketing, you want influencers to amplify your content, that's the wrong way to look at it. That's you're paying for mouthpieces to sort of shout your message out, and you just hope that they'll do that. You'll end up having to pay people. They'll have to share content that they're not proud of, and that it will lose trust in their audience. So it can't be at the end of when you're creating a campaign. It has to be built into the beginning. And I think the influencers are the perfect content creators. So the most perfect influencers create the content, they translate the brand story into their own personal message for their audience, and they have the expertise and the influence to be able to do that. And it's not only the external influences, it's also your internal influences. So when we talk about influencers, they could be employees, they could be your subject matter experts, they could be salespeople, they could be your exec leaders. So creating content from them and from the external influencers and from customers who, of course, you know, have influence over your market because they will influence other customers is part of the organic strategy that you need to think of. So we don't think of it as, you know, have a campaign and then spend 10% of your campaign on influence amplification. That's still the advertising model like you're talking about. And so I think it's really a change in social transformation, and organizations are really getting it that people don't trust brands, and you've got to invest in your employees, you've got to invest in the influencers, and then you get individual, much more of a people-led buyer journey. So I talk about that a lot. I think the Employee Advocacy 2.0 or Influencer Marketing 2.0 is the people-led buyer journey. And what brands really struggle with is how can you mobilize, especially in B2B context, when you've got 100,000 employees and lots of different campaigns and silos, how do you mobilize influencer marketing to socially transform your organization? It's a long journey. You can do it with individual campaigns, but this is something that is really going to grow in B2B over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and it's a struggle because most brands or marketing or agencies or advertising have like windows, and they're like, well, here's our strategy for Q3. And so we need to do XXX. So trying to flip the model of it's a longer term strategy, really, like what is the ROI on your relationships? How do you build that into to get buy-in from senior leadership when, you know, what you're talking about is so much bigger picture and longer term, but a lot of it's not tangible in like a, we're going to pay get X deliverables for X amount of money and it's going to produce this many impressions.
Yeah, I think that's a really big challenge. I always advise that you've got to be able to have quick wins in 12 weeks and a long-term strategy. So when people say this is a long-term, you shouldn't look at the wins in the first 12 weeks. I say, no, absolutely. There's quarterly budget cycles. If you put in X amount of dollars, you need to get a return. And some of our clients like IBM, you know, they drive, you know, 36% of social registrations to their Think event. You know, that was over a 12-week period. Other organizations driving like 135% to pipeline year on year, like through, you know, 11 influencers generating loads of impressions, you know, thousands and thousands of impressions from just a handful of influencers. And you know, these are tangible results. So it's really important that you can create campaigns, I think, that can return the results for your senior management in 12 weeks. But you also need to get the exec leader buy-in that this is something that has long-term value. Because I think the really interesting thing is when you come with 135% increase in demand generation, execs say, yeah, but I'm interested to see what the quality of the content's like. And they start asking qualitatively after you produce the quantitative. If you just produce your qualitative metrics, say, actually, this, you know, people really like the quality of this content. They said, yeah, but did it drive any leads? Did it drive awareness? You really need both in a B2B context. And I think that's where some people struggle because they just focus on the short term or just focus on the long term. So they either lose their budget or they don't get the long term buy-in from the execs.
Yeah, Tim, I guess, and I've sort of come to the same conclusion that if a company really wants to be successful across the organization, including the employees, it really does begin at the top, doesn't it? I mean, do you find working with companies, you hit roadblocks that impact their success if you don't get executive buy-in, or most of the companies you work with already have that executive buy-in?
I think it differs. I think the execs are feeling under pressure. There's a lot of execs that I interview personally, and I interview them as part of a social advocacy LinkedIn Live series that I'm doing, but I also speak to them offline. And offline, they struggle for time. They know that they need to show up. They're pretty good on video, but they just don't have the time to work out the social algorithms. And some of them don't have that light bulb moment of, you know, I'm speaking to 30 influential people now, but I could speak to 10,000 people if I get my social strategy right. And it's a mix at the moment, but I think especially the sort of tech brands, you know, in B2C, whether it's the beauty and fashion brands, they've obviously got it for a while that those influencers are really, really key to their success. So I think the tech industry understands it. And I think that there's other industries like manufacturing, for example, that, you know, is the longer burn, but they have so much expertise in their and professional services firms that I think they're realizing that they need to showcase their expertise online. And the exec leaders are coming to us saying, look, I want to do more. I'd like to show up. I want to motivate my troops and my tribe. But they just need a bit more handholding because they're very, very short of time.
So when a company comes to you, what capacity, like, do you guys sort of take, like, how much do you do? Do you take over the role of, like, diving in and figuring out what do they need? We'll do all the research. We're going to find, or is it because I know you have a customer, more of a hands-on, or is it mostly just like the algorithms and the software? How would you go about using like the different ways that you can work with your?
Yeah. So we have a technology platform that's at the heart and center of what we do. So we're a software vendor, but we have supporting professional services and consultancy. So we have a 5-stage model. It's discovery, insights, activation, management, and measurement. So first of all, discovery, find the relevant influencers. Then insights, you really want to find out how well your brand is doing so far with a 12-month benchmark, because then you can measure the uplift, you know, once you've run the campaign to see what good looks like. You also need to find the insights in terms of the motivations of the influencers. So we recently launched a B2B marketplace, which is we believe the largest B2B influence marketplace in the world. I know that there's a lot of people claiming that, but they tend to be for much sort of smaller influencers. So really that marketplace is about understanding the motivations of an individual influencer. Maybe they don't want to work for less than $15,000. Maybe they want to work organically in exchange for support for their foundation. All of these kind of motivations are really, really important and very hard to know unless the influencer offers that up to you. So that's the insight stage. The activation is really contacting the influencer, having a conversation, trying to get the collaboration and the brief right. And, you know, it's really key that the influencer has input into that rather than the brand saying, this is what we want you to do. And then the management part is the statement of work. It's the payment. It's making sure that the, you know, key deliverables are actually carried out and that everyone's happy with the process. And then the measurement part is absolutely critical. So I don't think in influence marketing or in social media that measurement is that advanced. I don't think it's a real core skill of a lot of people. So measurement is something that we do a lot of to be able to help them showcase internally how impressive the results have been so that they can try and get that long-term buy-in, especially if they're running a pilot. So it's really five stages. The technology is at the heart of it. It can be a self-serve platform, but I don't think the marketplace is there yet to use purely a self-serve. I think people are still trying to figure out their strategy, like you said. So we tend to get asked to lead a lot of the strategy as well.
So Tim, and by the way, congrats. I know the influencer marketplace is relatively new, but definitely the gold standard in terms of a B2B marketplace. It almost sounds like counterintuitive, but the amount of work you put in to really glean that insight and really interview each influencer among a lot of different categories, I think it's a compelling product that everybody, if you're in B2B, should check out. I'm just curious though, for those companies that have yet to begin this journey of B2B influencer marketing, when we think of B2C, okay, someone creates content, they post it, they amplify it, you know, done. B2B, that content can be done in so many different ways, whether it's employee influencer on the one hand, or obviously subject matter expert on the other hand. What are the different, you know, I don't want to say campaigns, but based on all the companies you work with, what are the different, you know, siloed types of things that companies are doing and getting results from their B2B influencer marketing efforts?
Yeah, I think it's insightful, the different, you know, where it starts, because quite a lot of the time, budget is assigned to events. And you know, pre-pandemic, that was more significant, right? Because maybe 80% of the annual budget was into the sort of marquee event, which might not be the case now. So a lot of the time it was like, we're running this a big event and we want to drive more awareness and engagement. And that's kind of a straight, okay, do you want your people to show up like a tweet chat on the event? Do you want them to create content during the event and talk about it on LinkedIn and Twitter? Do you want to create a podcast, or do you want to appear on their podcast or interview them on yours? And so sometimes it's around event, and it could be awareness or engagement or driving certain registrations pre-event. It's really evolved where sometimes it's just about driving leads with net new logos. So we have like a really big tech company that everyone would have heard of looking to drive net new logos just through an email nurturing campaign. So creating influence generated content as the quality asset to be embedded in their email marketing is just improving the quality of their email outreach to just improve their results by 20%. So it's now shown up in lots of different areas. It also can be, you know, one professional services company is wanting to be more of a tech brand, and you know, they want to activate exec leaders and subject matter experts to become more influential. So this is just an employee, you know, starting exercise. But actually, they're talking to each other quite a lot within the professional services company. And by them creating content with external influencers, it then, you know, creates that, you know, co-creation of content, but also that external impact that they're wanting to create. It drives much more engagement on their channel, and it gives them a, you know, a platform upon which they can continue to be externally impactful. So I think it sometimes starts with an account-based marketing approach. Sometimes it's event impact. Sometimes it's employee advocacy. Sometimes it's exec comms. Sometimes it's a straight demand gen campaign. And sometimes it's a content marketing series where they're doing episodic content on a particular thought leadership topic. So I love your question, because it's just morphing into like 7 to 10 use cases. But the critical thing is that the stages stay the same: the discovery, insights, activation, management, and measurement. You just pick different types of influencers and you activate them with different types of content. Sometimes it's organic activation, sometimes it's paid for. And the measurement changes, because it's either registrations or leads or impressions, or it could be the impact of the employees' social channels on LinkedIn and Twitter. So that's what we love, you know, because it's not just Instagram posts, product sales. You know, obviously I'm simplifying it a bit, but it is different and it requires a bit of thought.
Yeah, indeed. And for those of you that have read The Age of Influence, Analytica is featured in there, the VMworld Europe case study of that event. And the impact that tweet chat had is one of the case studies that I chose. So hopefully you'll go ahead and read that. But Tim, this has been great. I know that, you know, B2B companies out there should be reaching out to you. There might be some subject matter experts that also want to be part of the marketplace. So where can people go to find out more about how Analytica helps companies as well as that marketplace?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Neil and Amanda. You can go to analytica.com. You know, all of our resources and blog and content and ebooks are there to be able to sort of download. So please check that out. You know, connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's where I hang out. It's at Williams Tim on Twitter and just Tim Williams Analytica on LinkedIn. You can find me there. It's been a pleasure to be part of this. And thank you so much for being leaders in the industry as well, across, you know, influence business, social media, influence marketing, all of the, you know, all of the above topics.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's always an honor to chat. And I look forward to seeing you, and hopefully together with Amanda, seeing you in person in London in the not so distant future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.